internet movie reviewer and a filmmaker in and of himself. Steve Merlo is here on the show. How are you, sir?
Very, very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime. Merlo is currently the host of Merlo's Macabre Matinee, as well as Sawyer Massacre, which is a 60s Texas Chainsaw fan film set in just that, the 1960s. And you've always been an avid fan of film. When did you decide you're going to take that plunge and actually start doing some of it?
That would be probably roughly 10 years ago. Maybe not quite 10 years ago, but I was always kind of intrigued by film and had a quite a big interest. But, you know, in my 20s, I was kind of I was a professional musician. And I could kind of committed to that, I guess you could say, and never really thought I would, you know, leave that until I was in my 30s. And, you know, I met my now wife, and I give her a lot of credit for my jump into film, because I would always tell her, you know, oh, I always wanted to kind of get into film and had all these ideas for movies and stuff like that. But, you know, just I had no experience, you know, so... But she was somebody who pushed me into doing it. Just go ahead and try and do it, and make mistakes and fail as much as you have to fail, and I'll stand by you through it. And you know, with that kind of motivation, you know, it just made it easy for me to stick with it.
Sure. So you're from British Columbia. What was your experience just growing up there, you know, embracing Canadian film?
I grew up mostly in British Columbia. I did spend a little bit of time in Alberta. Well, that's just one province over. Very different provinces, though, I must say that. but I don't know. I had a pretty, I don't know if it'd be a normal childhood, but we moved around quite a bit. You know, I got into music, started playing guitar at about 13 or 14 years old, and, you know, was really heavily inspired by the grunge bands of the 90s. And I just made music sort of my career. You know, I joined a band when I was about 18, and we had those dreams to make it huge in the music industry. And of course, you know, that never really happened, but I always loved music, and I did play music for a living for quite a while, and ran my own music school. And eventually, you know, when that kind of slowed down for me, I decided that's when I wanted to get into film.
Stellar. And would you say you just paced yourself pretty well? You're just always just thinking of how you could do a film, be in, be out, spend, you know, not too much time, spend right amount of money, and just get a good collaboration out of it every time, where you're just like, hey, we learned so much from each other working together.
Yeah, for sure. When I first started, and believe it or not, the first thing I ever did was a Texas Chainsaw Massacre fan film, which I have a copy of somewhere. I don't know. I'll have to look for that. But, you know, it was a learning experience. I'd never done it before, and It was my wife, and then it was other people that were in the local film industry, you know, kind of pushed me into it and helped me out and gave me some notes here and there. And, you know, had a lot of people reading my scripts and stuff like that. And, you know, just making notes and just trying to be a better writer and then a better director. And, you know, I never went to film school, so I never really had that, that really hands-on learning, other than volunteering on other people's films and going from there. You know, it was it's something you're always learning. You're constantly learning and constantly trying to get better at what you do. And I'm still learning. We're always learning.
That's a good point, because you do need the right amount of encouragement, and you do got to see how thick your skin is to begin with. And at the same time, if this is becoming so much trouble, then it's just not going to be worth it in the long end.
I've dealt with that. You know, I mean, it's you do have to have thick skin, because the chances are your first film is not going to be very good, especially if you didn't go to film school, and especially if you don't have resources or money or anything like that.
The internet will keep being hostile.
It will. Oh yeah,
having people say the most tasteless things. My sister was so surprised that the people trolling her on TikTok. I'm like, that half of the time those are bots, or that's their idea, is like just pick on anyone who looks like they're trying and giving a damn.
Oh yeah. So I mean, it's, you have to have thick skin, and there's a lot of people that can't take a lot of the criticisms that you'll get, and that those are people that are, you know, that don't make it. You know, they don't get past the first film. You know, they say, okay, I tried it, and maybe they tried a second time and still got all the criticism, and that was, you know, that was enough for them. You know, because it is a lot of work. You put your heart and soul into something, and if it doesn't turn out as good as you expect it or as you want to be received, it's easy to get discouraged and quit and try something else, you know? So, you know, I had to have thick skin. I always had to be learning, and you know, there were moments, of course, when I was down from the criticism I got, but at the same time, I listened to it. You know, I didn't necessarily agree with everything, but you got to actually listen to it and think about it. You know, it's does this person have a point? You know, that's always kind of the way I've looked at it. You know, anytime I've had criticism, you know, does this person have a point? And you know, a lot of times I realize that they do. So I kind of go off of that, and
got to filter through the bullshit to get to the heart of it. It's like, okay,
exactly.
Yeah. You don't like this kind of movie or that kind of thing, but one thing that is making sense to me that is registering with me is, it didn't make any sense the way it was edited together. I'm like, okay, well, now I got to work on that. I better start it off differently.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes you can tell who only read the first page of your screenplay and just said it sucks. And it's like, okay, well, I don't know how much of that was you and not making an effort, or you legit were offended by it, but you know, that's nothing to go on unless you've read the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I haven't really encountered too much of that, you know, people that said they were going to read my screenplay and then they don't, but a little bit, but you know, I did have a few people read screenplays of mine and give me notes and criticisms here and there. And some of it is a matter of opinion. You know, there is certain things that you're going to have here as far as criticisms that are more of an opinion based thing, where they say, I think you should do this instead of that. And then, you know, I'll consider it. I'll still listen to it and I'll still think about it, you know, how well that fits. But you know, that many times I'll come back and say, no, it's not for me. You know, it's not the way I want it to go. A good example of that was somebody that read the screenplay for The Sawyer Massacre and was giving me notes, and a lot of his notes were really, really good, but he had suggested at the end that one of the, you know, somebody that was traumatized in the movie went to counseling and saw Dr. Loomis, you know, so it would tie into Halloween, and I thought, no, it's not what this movie is about. So, you know, so it's not a spoiler alert, because that's not the way it's ending or anything like that. But
that would be a little too ambitious, but yeah, it is kind of fun. You can kind of do various crossovers. There's a lot of Hellraiser fan films that crossover with the prophecy. Oh, yeah.
It's a popular thing. It's not my favorite thing, though. I'll admit that I don't particularly like the shared universe movies, you know, Freddy versus Jason, all that. I'm not a big fan of that kind of thing, but
it's fine.
But I understood it. I understood why he thought that. I just, it's not something that I would want to do with a film like this, you know?
Absolutely. So, how would you describe your process? Like, how you plan, how you storyboard, pick your shot list, pick your shoot days, get everyone in and out?
I actually don't storyboard at all. I'm a shot list kind of guy.
Fine. I've met so many people who, I know what production is doing if they can't do any kind of describing to their camera people, to their crew, as to what they're looking for. And it's just so frustrating, because you'll hear all sorts of exceptions. Oh, I don't know what a shot list is supposed to look like. Or I can't draw. It's like, just tell us something, because otherwise we're going to be here all day debating exactly over what it looks like.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of doing storyboards. I'm big on my shot lists. I'm huge on doing shot lists, but I feel, you know, with too much of that stuff, it can get a little bit complex. And then depending on the way you're shooting and your locations and stuff like that, it could totally not match up with what your vision is. And that was actually kind of the case with this film, The Sawyer Massacre, because, you know, I'm in Western Canada, and we shot this film in a little town called Bartlett, which is just north of Austin. And so, I mean, I had only seen the locations that we had booked. I was scouting the locations online pretty much, and I was only seeing pictures of them. So it was really, really hard to totally gauge what they're like, the layout and everything like that. And even when we got there and I had my shot lists, we pretty much threw the shot lists out the window, because the layout of the locations were just not matching up with the shot list. So, you know, that's a good point though.
Cause like, there's so many who will just do the whole, stick to the plan, even though the plan's not working. And so that's cool that you, again, are doing what many have had to realize is, like, again, just like any script, just like any production, that's the template. I know that the hard way that's not working. So plan B, guys, you know?
Yeah. You have to be prepared for plan B. That's for sure.
And before we get to plan C through F through Z or yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it was a tough thing for me to know that I made all those shot lists for every single day and planned them out as well as I did, and all to see them kind of go out the window. And, you know, a few shots that were on the list here or there got in, but for the most part, it was there was just not much we could do. We had to go off of what we had, and in a lot of cases, we didn't have what we needed. So, you know, we had to change the script in a lot of cases. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the script that we had to change just because the layouts and the layouts of the locations just didn't match. So it's something I'm learning even more and more, is to just scout your locations yourself. You know, if I could have been down in Texas, there's a big part of me that wishes I could have traveled to Texas back in like September or something like that, to really, really scout my locations and make sure they're exactly what I'm looking for. And, you know, not rely on just, you know, looking at some pictures that, you know, this looks old, so it looks cool, you know, but how is it actually laid out? You know, that was a big issue we had. And we had to really think on our feet with this film, because there was a lot of stuff that wasn't meshing with the script. So we made it work, though. We made it work.
Very cool. And would you also say that, you know, since everyone learns out the hard way, is like, it's never really going to look entirely what you pictured or how you scouted it. Would you say it's also a matter of just keep your confidence levels up, and that's the only way everything, you know, sticks together?
That's definitely a big thing, for sure. Keeping your confidence level up. Confidence goes a long way, and morale on set. You know, if your cast and crew aren't happy with the way things are going, they're gonna bail on you, you know. So
yeah,
you know, going into the production of this movie, and things weren't looking too good at the beginning of this production. We had bad weather. We had people ghost us before, you know, for shooting, you know. And
very common thing. Even after the paperwork is done, it's amazing how many will just still bail. Yeah. They're like, "You're not going to take me to court." I'm like, "You're right." But at the same time, I am going to blacklist you.
Oh yeah, that's the way it goes.
This guy is unreliable.
This person's unreliable. We'll never make contact with this person again. You know, and it's not the first time it's happened to me. We were kind of prepared for that kind of thing, but at the same time, it made things very, very difficult. We in the script, we needed five time period vehicles for the movie, and three of them did not make it. One of them ghosted us, and one of them died on us, and I don't know. And another one of them called and said that we can't make it, you know. And I think one of them actually, they said they wouldn't be able to do it because of the weather, worried about getting rain on your car or something like that. I don't know. It was weird, but that's the way it happened. So we went from 5 vehicles to 2. I made some calls during the first day and we got a third one, but we had to rewrite the script to only have 3 vehicles in the movie. And I think we did a good job thinking on our feet. Me and the director of photography had a lot of powwows and, you know, how do we pull this off? And nice. I'm sure he hates me for a lot of this stuff, but I'm sure he doesn't hate me, but at the same time, you know, I'm sure he wished it went smoother. That's for sure. You know, we made it through, you know, that's what you do. And the cast and crew was great. You know, if the cast and crew wasn't, you know, right on it, you know, it could have been a totally different film that we shot, you know. So I'm very grateful to all the amazing people that we filmed with and that we made it happen and turned out something as good as we have. So not really perfect still, but, you know, there's still things I'm like, geez, I wish I got this and I wish I got that. But it's low budget filmmaking. At the end of the day, it's low budget filmmaking and you're not going to get everything you want.
What do you recommend when you do a cast and crew call for something like this? Because as we were mentioning before, when we were warming up, there's a lot of people who don't understand what a fan film is. And some of them are like, oh, you're going to get sued, you know, because it's unofficial and not everyone's going to get paid and what have you. And so how do you go about it? Do you often just do untitled, you know, slasher tribute, or what would you recommend for people also trying to do fan films, since those are pretty popular and people are still doing them?
You know, the fan films, just make sure you put fan film in the title. Make sure that you put a disclaimer on your stuff. And I don't know. I mean, you're going to get cast and crew. People love being a part of fan films. And I think the fact that it's a fan film, a lot of times professional cast and crew will be willing to either lower their typical fees or sometimes even go free, you know, do something for free. Mm-hmm. So I think that's always kind of the key when you're casting these fan films, is make sure they know it's a fan film. And you know, I kind of made the mistake of saying I think we're going to try to get about $100,000 budget for this movie, which would have been nice, but it was very nice. Very improbable. So, you know, when I was casting people, you know, I was saying, you know, the expectation would be to pay you all $150 a day if we could raise that kind of money. But that's that's not it just wasn't very probable that we were going to raise $100K. And we didn't raise $100K. We didn't even raise half that. So, I mean, some people I did have to pay $150 a day. Some people, you know, were very accommodating. And I don't like not paying people though. So, you know, it's, I really hate not paying people. In fact, I think people are worth more than $150 a day. I think they're worth double that or triple that, you know, but,
right.
And I feel bad at the end of the day when I can't pay people. So, I do my best to cover that, but, you know, you're not always so lucky and that's just the way it goes sometimes. But it's why I'm still crowdfunding too. You know, I'm hoping that we can hit our post-production goal and go beyond that, so I can pay some of these people a little bit more than, you know, more than what they got. That's for sure.
Very good point. There's
take care of your cast and crew, but you know, at least feed them well, though. Well,
always feed them. Yeah, I have seen some who would do that, where it's like they'd pay them, but they wouldn't feed them. I'm like, okay, well, you got to do one or the other. It's just. Or both, but don't not. The thing is, you can never not feed them. That was like one I was taught like from day one. It's like you can't not.
Whether you're paying them or not, you have to feed them. And it can't be like feed them, you know, spam or something like that. You know, cans of spam and that's your food. It doesn't work that way. You got to have real food on set.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe also just the planning, because again, like
a lot of planning, pre-production is huge. there's the finding of the people, there's the scouting of locations, there's the making of the shot list, making of the schedule and the call sheets and everything. I mean, I basically had to be the production coordinator for the majority. I did have somebody helping a little bit with the coordinating, but at the end of the day, I made the shot list. I made the call sheets. I made, you know, it's a lot of planning, you know. I was on Google Maps every day trying to find the right locations. And you know, I had one specific exterior location in mind that never really quite got what we wanted, but came somewhat close, you know. So, it's just one of those things, you know, you have to do a lot of work. You have to be willing to do a lot of planning if you're going to be successful. Because, you know, otherwise you go into it kind of, there's so much potential for bad stuff to happen if you don't plan. I don't know what, there's not much more you can say, but you just got to do it all, you know, and get your insurance, get permits if needed. It all takes time. It all takes a bit of time. So just get it all done is what all I can say to people is, take the time and don't rush it. Very and make cool. sure your cast and crew know the schedule. And the thing is, you know, you're always going to have somebody change the schedule on you. It seems to always happen to me anyways. And so be prepared to change it if you have to. And I don't know, it's, it's a lot of work. Pre-production can be very, very tough.
Absolutely. And so when did you start your internet review site?
I'm not really a review kind of guy. I have a YouTube channel. I've had my YouTube channel for quite a while, actually, and I wasn't really doing a lot on it. And, you know, once I started doing this film, you know, I would do a live stream, you know, to promote the film. And, you know, I'd get people in the chat, you know, chatting with you and you know, saying this and that, and it'd become a discussion. You know, I'm more of a person that just likes to discuss things with people. So I don't really consider myself a movie reviewer or anything like that. I'm a person that likes to discuss and hear people's opinions and share my opinions at the same time. So I started doing that on my YouTube channel. I did my live stream. It's called Merlot's Movie Massacre. Yep. And we do chat a little bit about my film on there as well a lot. And I promote other, indie filmmakers and indie artists of all sorts. And just, you know, we pick a topic and I prepare my own opinions on certain things, whether it's a movie review or top 10 list or something like that, or, you know, I just try to have fun with it. I'm doing it to have fun. And as long as it's fun and I have people that are there to chat with, I have fun doing it. I'm not one of those guys that likes to pre-record, you know, something and put it out there. I like to actually engage with people. It's always been my thing. Every time I try to do a pre-recorded thing, I have the technology to do it, but I just don't feel like I'm being natural when I'm pre-record something I'm saying. I don't know. It's just not my thing. I've tried it a few times now and I don't like the way they turn out. I don't feel really good about them like I do when I'm live and spontaneous and chatting with my viewers. And I don't know. I just enjoy that better. It's more and it's more fun for me. It's all about fun.
Right.
I really don't make money doing it, that's for sure. I just I do it for fun and you know, it does help. I guess I do promote my film a little bit more every time I do it, so.
Right.
Yeah.
What have been your favorite topics to talk about? Also just kind of give a little insight into what kind of movies you were also a huge fan of, and you could talk endlessly about actors, filmmakers, franchises.
For sure. I mean Texas Chainsaw Massacre takes a huge amount of time on my channel. I don't feel like there's a lot of channels that like dedicate a lot of time to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I've always tried to cover as much about that film as I can, whether it be the new film that came out when that was leading up. I was giving all, you know, sharing all the news I'm hearing and all this, all that kind of stuff, and did trailer reactions and all that. And then just, you know, talk about the other films, and I've done rankings on the other films, and I like Halloween a lot as well. So I've done rankings on the Halloween franchise. Yeah, I don't know. It's just anything that's, that I find interesting to talk about, I guess. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far, you know, and so I'll keep doing it and just keep doing it, having fun. But I keep it horror. I'm keeping it horror for now, that's for sure.
Okay. Who have been your other favorite podcast to collaborate with?
I had Dave McRae on my channel once. That was kind of fun. I've really admired his channel. And the way he does live streams, and he does videos as well, pre-recorded videos as well. But, yeah, so pretty much him. And I used to watch, I used to watch Collider Video, but I don't really watch that anymore. Who else do I like a lot? I'm trying to remember names of people. I'm hardly on there anymore. I never have time, but, yeah, I used to like the guys from We Watched the Movie. They're pretty fun to watch sometimes. Yeah.
Very cool. And let's give about like free tips for those just have some kind of indie film kick post-pandemic. What are free things that you're going to tell them, or just tips that everyone has to take to their bed and just recite?
As far as like new filmmakers
anyone getting any kind of thing, like distribution, good attitude, you know, just.
Well, I mean, at first and management. Foremost, what's that? Sorry.
Time management. Yeah.
Time management. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, time management, don't rush it. You know, if you want to see something done right, take the time. Pre-production is very, very, all stages of production are very, very important. Make sure your script is good. And so that means let people read it.
Do something.
Yeah. Get criticisms, take the criticisms, and that'll improve your writing. It ultimately will. So get that script ready. Then once the script is good, then, you know, find the right people, you know, find good people to work with. Network lots, you know, don't be afraid to add people to your Instagram or Facebook that's in the film industry, you know, and get advice, reach out to as many people as you can. Take the time in pre-production to make sure everything is as good as possible. Scout the locations yourself, you know, take video of each one if you can, you know, it's stuff like that. It's huge. And if you want to learn before you actually go on set, and make your own film, volunteer on other people's sets. You can learn a lot from volunteering.
This has been splendid. So thank you again for an hour of your time, and just
no problem.
We need more of these kinds of positive attitudes, because we see so many other indie film circles, but at the end of the day, it's kind of more just kind of ego, like, oh, I'm going to be doing the best. It's like, just tell me what you're doing, what you're about, and, you know, invite people along as opposed to get on your pedestal and, you know, rant for 2 hours.
I mean, I've encountered so many people that, you know, think that their ideas are absolutely 100% the best, and that's okay. I mean, people need to be positive, but they need to take some criticisms too, wherever they can. And cause that's the only way they actually really truly get better. You know, it's something that we all have to be willing to do, is to take the criticisms where we can, and learn from our mistakes. And cause you know, you're never going to make something great right off the bat. So learn from those mistakes, take the criticisms, and, always move forward instead of backwards. If you're making something slightly better each time, then you know you're on the right track.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Again, thanks a million for being on here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Follow us. us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.